Star Maha David.
What's good, Kevin?
How's your week?
It's cool.
Yeah.
The weather's cool, right?
The weather is
great.
Lovely.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. That's why we live here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
not in the winter, but yeah.
Yeah, you had a good week. You had a bunch of things happen this week.
Have a bunch of things, and those things are over, and that's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, congrats.
Thank you.
We've been talking about getting this young man on the show before
for a very long time.
We've had his family,
right, yeah.
Chosen and blood
for the first inaugural episode.
Yeah,
I think that's repetitive, but
yeah. But quite a year for this young man. One of the most prolific writers, artists in Chicago. This, you know, succession of albums has kind of catapulted him into a national, international spotlight. Recently off the release, we're a few, you know, 3 and a little bit of change months in to the release of Care For Me. A national tour that sold out everywhere. You know, from the West Side Boy Band, Pivot Gang, one mm-hmm. of the prime principal members. People have been saying this is album of the year.
Yeah.
Not just in Chicago, yeah. But the word is out. One of the nicest with the pen is in the corner store. Saba, welcome to our studio today, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. Thanks for the heartfelt intro.
Facts, man.
He'd be cold with the intro.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He does very well. He wasn't reading, just so people know. He's
yeah,
not reading.
Just from his brain.
No notes.
Yeah, he
no
freestyle,
notes.
He freestyled that
off the top. Well, before we get too far, I know you also kind of walked in hungry, which is good because you're in the booth, but also because we have some snacks for you in the corner store.
Is me chewing getting picked up?
We love.
It's okay. We like the sound effects.
Yeah, we do. But we want to offer you. We did a little research, by the way. Sophie, the snack provider today, did a little research.
Snacktress.
Snacktress. Got you some Flamin' Hot Munchie Snack Mix.
We'll try it out.
Okay.
How bad can it really be? You know?
Yeah. I mean, do you like Flamin' Hots?
Yeah. I got a thing with Flamin' Hots where I don't really eat them, like, in public, though.
Okay. Well,
this is
you're
like
on the radio.
Semi-private.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I eat them in the comforts of my own home.
Oh, okay.
What
okay.
happens?
Because then you
my
gotta
lips
smash
get
the whole bag.
So red.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just can do nothing about it. I go to the bathroom for like 30 minutes and try to just get it off. But
dead ass, I think I have like a wet wipe in my bag.
Wait, I do too. So, you know.
So you're
really
among friends.
Scrub.
You know. Also, though, to wash that down, we also have a Sprite for you.
Okay, I'll accept this. Thank you.
So unenthusiastically.
No, that's good. No, he's chill. He's chill.
Okay,
and then also some sour bright crawlers, aka I think these are sour gummy worms.
Yeah, gummy worms.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin, Sophie and Tara.
You feel a little better about those. I feel like.
I do. I've been doing a thing. So I have a thing, and I've never really shared this with anybody before. But
wow, already out the
we're
gate
really here
with this exclusive content,
yeah, right?
I know.
I shouldn't be around candy, man.
What's going on?
I'm bad with it. Very bad at handling candy.
Like it falls out of your hands, or it falls into your face, or
I just
into
you
your
love
face.
It.
I love it. I love it a ridiculous amount. Like I eat a lot of candy.
You got to watch your sugars.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, cut back.
Okay, well,
I mean,
sorry.
You could also gift those to.
No. I'm definitely accepting them, and they'll be at my house until I am
finished,
know, ready.
do you have a top 5 candy selection that you or like a go to candy?
Anything, bro?
Really?
I really would.
I feel that 100%.
Our studio is across the street from a Family Dollar.
Oh, that's dangerous.
And I've been making terrible decisions since we moved in. But I've been, you know, I'm learning, I'm cutting back. I've been having a good couple weeks where I don't think I've really eaten much candy, you know, but that shit is just terrible for me, you know, cookies and shit like that.
Yeah.
Like
well, we're sorry to be enablers.
I mean, it's fine. I haven't eaten, so I'm probably gonna, like, despite this, like, long disclaimer of why it's bad that this is here, I'm probably going to still get indulge.
Into it. Okay. Know? All right. Well, enjoy.
I'm not here to judge myself.
You know? We are not judging you. Well, we have a lot of ground to cover. And mm-hmm. and I think, you know, Tara has interviewed you. I think this is the 30th time. I'm
yeah,
not sure.
Probably like 30 times. Yeah.
So I don't want to necessarily go over ground that Tara's certainly already covered, and I know we talked about wanting to get into kind of the yeah.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
Yeah. Sprite, get at us.
Aspirational sponsor. Yeah. Hey.
Maybe, you know. You know, but it's been a big year, and I think we want to talk a lot about the changes of this year. But just, you know,
we can have a primer.
Yeah, of course. Like, I mean, just kind of Saba 101.
I don't know what that means.
You know, just like
intro,
a crash course.
Yes. Okay. Nutshell.
Right. Like yes. you're from the West Side.
I am from the West Side.
Born and raised.
Yep.
Austin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where what kind of house did you come up in?
Let me describe the house. Let me put the chips down.
Okay. And we're good with the sound effects though too. So do you? But
okay, I just don't want anybody to, like, you know, there's some weird listener out there like he's chewing. Yes,
no, that's what happens. We eat the corner store. We chop it up. We talk shit.
House was pretty awesome. Loved you know, I was talking about my childhood actually like a couple days ago with my father. And it was pretty great. Had I been able to change everything, I wouldn't change much. Lived with my grandparents. Parents are around and in my life. I think that's one thing. Like, when I'm like, I live with my grandparents, people are like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like,
we're like, no.
How long ago did your parents die? And I'm like, no, they're good. But yeah, I live with my grandparents. I lived with my uncle. And my older brother, an older cousin of mine, and my younger sister. And my mom lived with us when she felt like it and didn't when she didn't feel like it. And I don't know, man, it was just a real sense of family that's still very strong. You know, it's a grandmother's house, you know, a grandparents' house, rather. So it's, you know, we grew up. I don't really know. It's,
and your grandparents,
it's, you know, in the middle of the first block of Chicago, in the Austin area. So it's like, you know, you gotta navigate. You gotta learn how to navigate early. But I think we did. My parents and my grandparents, and just everybody involved in our upbringing, I think they did a pretty solid job. Like, we weren't, you know, all the way removed from everything, but they did their best, and I think they did a pretty excellent job in, like, keeping us straight, keeping us set on whatever goals we have for ourselves and shit.
What did your grandparents do? Because I remember maybe something about your grandfather, but
I don't even know. That's crazy. He got so many stories of just him doing random jobs and right. random things. I don't know what he retired as. You know, I know he worked in the city. I know he helped a lot of young people. I know he did a lot of different things and has just millions and millions of stories, but what his actual job description, what he got paid to do,
unclear.
I couldn't really tell you. And my grandmother is a nurse.
Okay.
So yeah, so that was kind of that. But for as long as I can remember, my grandfather's been retired. Like, I don't know him as working, so that's why I don't know much about his work. And yeah, my grandma's a nurse. And yeah, now that I think about it, I don't know what my other grandparents really do either. I know my other grandfather was he was the alderman at a point.
Right.
He was the alderman, and he was also a musician as well.
Right. This is your
my dad's dad.
Okay.
My dad's dad.
They were in Chicago?
What was that?
They were in Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah, he just passed away last year.
I'm sorry.
Oh, right. But he lived in, like, Arizona or something.
Yeah. He lived in, was it Arizona? Is that something. Where Phoenix is?
Yep.
Yeah. Phoenix, Arizona. Yep.
I know your life better than you.
Hey, sometimes, you know, the internet is a crazy place.
Okay, you said that to my face, though, not the internet.
Oh yeah,
it's
sorry.
Is during an interview that I found sorry. That out? It's cool.
But your family is very musical.
Very musical. Yeah, very musical.
And your dad's been on your projects before.
Yeah, yeah. I had to. I realized something the other day because I always credit my dad for like how I got into music and shit. It was not my dad. Here's an exclusive that I'm breaking right
now.
It
does not stop.
It was, in fact, my mom.
Huh. Often is.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Of course it is. My mom taught me Mary Had a Little Lamb on my toy piano.
Okay.
Learning that song, I went to my great-grandmother's house, and she had a real piano. So I'm like, let's see if the keys match up to my toy keys. They did.
Hey.
I played Mary Had a Little Lamb. My great grandmother then gave me that piano.
Wow.
So that was the, like, we're in music now.
But did you forget that?
Totally forgot that.
Oh, that's interesting.
Totally forgot that because I had been making music, you know, around my father for so long. And it's like, I think it's just is equal, you know, in terms of like wanting to pursue music and just knowing that that was a career choice. And like, you know, just seeing my dad make music had that much, you know, inspiration for me as a kid. But the initial thing that I learned how to do was from my mom. And that's the thing that I really just thought of like a week ago. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
But why did she teach you? Just because, or?
I don't know. It's like a thing, you know.
She plays the piano?
Not at all.
Oh.
But Mary Had a Little Lamb. You don't have to play the piano
that's
to
true,
know that
that's
one.
That's true.
But yeah, I don't know. It was like a thing that she knew how to do, and I was a baby, and she taught me. You just be teaching babies random shit, like
yeah.
Not. Like,
that's
I'm sure she had no idea that they would, you know, pick up and turn into what it has.
Well, make sure your mom listens to this, so
yeah,
that you know.
Yeah, I'll be sure
thank her.
So.
You know, for real.
Yeah. I thought about just calling her. I haven't
that
done
could,
it.
That
I
was, could, yeah, that
yeah,
could
I
work
need to
too.
Just call her and be like, "Hey, mom, I had it wrong. I had it all wrong. You know, I've been talking about dad so much that I forgot, you know, what the source was."
Right,
you know?
Exactly. Original. There are instruments around the house. There's music around the house. What was, you know, what was kind of the sonic space when you were younger coming up?
Sonic space. All right. I told you who all lived in the house. So that's, you know, it's different generations.
Big squad.
Yeah, big squad. So grandfather is older than grandma. He is into jazz heavy, you know, so that's his scene, jazz and talk radio.
Mm.
That's where he's at with it.
A lot of that on the actual radio
on the
when
radio.
You were in the crib, yeah.
Grandma is Luther Vandross crazy, you know, so that's that side. That's, you know, anything. I don't even, what year is that even? Luther had years and
eternal.
Decades and decades.
Just,
yeah. But that's the sound. That's the feel.
Okay.
Mom damn near from the streets. You feel me? Like mom playing Tupac and like N.W.A. and shit like that.
Yeah.
Upon like, you know what I'm saying? Like, some 90s, 80s, you know, like heavy R&B, like real R&B type shit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we from the streets, but I'm a lady. You
right.
feel
no,
me?
Yeah.
Like,
no,
I'm
no,
a
yeah.
lady.
Also, everyone has time to, like, smooth it out, you know?
Right. So, I heard a lot of New Jack Swing. I never was a fan of New Jack Swing.
Whoa.
That was always.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Even to this day? Or
I guess I've learned to appreciate it, but when it was like when I was a kid, I never liked it. I didn't like the drum sounds. They were really I don't understand them. I think as far as in the house, I guess my biggest like, you know, sources of like music and new music was my older brother and my uncle. Cause my uncle, he used to have all of the CDs from everybody, like him and a bootleg man was homies. So
nice.
So he used to get everything, and he had this big ass bag with just CDs and CDs, and it's like we could just take them. It's like nobody will notice
too many
if we just take one or something like that. And then, yeah, Joe was in the, like, I don't know, Joe was like where I got a lot of my hip hop stuff from.
Yeah, this is your older, for those who are late, your older brother, Joseph Chilliams.
What was he listening to?
He was listening to Diplomatic Immunity.
Mm. Nice.
That was what Joe was listening to. Joe had like these CDs with just music on it, though. It wasn't like a specific artist. It would just be like, you know, this is like LimeWire Prime, you know, so it's like one CD with all of these different songs on it by different people and different artists. And that's actually how I discovered Bone Thugs. Bone Thugs ended up being like one of the big inspirations in my music and reasons that I feel like I wanted to do music in the first place. But it was actually one of Joe's, I don't know where the hell he got, you know, got it from, but it was Notorious Thugs is on it. I think it might have just been like hella, it might have just been a Biggie album for all I know. I don't feel like it was, but it very well could have been. Because I don't know, I wasn't, like, I was really young, so it wasn't like hip-hop, like, lyrics and shit like that were really, like, resonating with me. I was just, like, trying to hear some cool shit. Like, I liked beats, I like melody and shit like that. Like, I wasn't really that into, like, oh, you live the hard life and you sell crack, like, shit like that. And that's what just all of the rappers were, you know, forcing, like, Seven or some shit. Like, right. I don't even know what crack is. Like, right. You know, I don't care that much. But I heard them, and they were just rapping different. And I'm like, oh, shit. And they would stop rapping and sing. And I'm like, this is tight. This is, and it was, like, the perfect, like, culmination of like all of those generations of music for me, at least. That's what it felt like. Like, it had, you know, someone with my granddad would like, and I remember my grandma liked the Crossroads records, so I felt real good playing Crossroads in the house. Like, hey grandma, you like this one too, like, you know, we can share this, because, you know, most of it's like, you know, all that damn cussing and shit like that. Like, grandparents not really trying to hear that.
Absolutely not.
But it was cool because Bone Thugs had something that, you know, I can play around my mom, play around my little sister. My little sister used to like, what was the song she liked? She liked First of the Month. Mm. But yeah, it was just, it was tight, you know?
I mean, not to fast forward too much, but eventually you've had the occasion to meet any of them?
Not yet.
Okay. Have you reached out, or have they? Because I've, you know, you've mentioned this, you know, before, that they were such, have been a big influence on who you've become as a musician.
Yeah,
is there a collab in the future? I mean,
In the future, yeah. You don't want to knock them out too early and then have nothing to look forward to. You know,
that's
kind of how I feel about most collabs that I really, really want to do and look forward to. It's mm-hmm. like, even if I could do it right now at this very moment, maybe I would wait and.
But wait, who else?
The other collabs?
Yeah.
I said it like I had them at the top of my head.
Yeah, you did.
I don't.
Okay.
I want to work with. Let's save that list.
Okay.
I want to drop
another time.
Yeah, for the next time you interview me.
Tomorrow, actually, you can catch it.
Questions I don't get to include in interviews, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of like,
I mean, I'll also see you, you know, out and about.
That's true. And I'll be like, collabless.
Hey, collabless. Yeah.
I wonder what other questions have you been wanting to.
Well, you know, with interviews, you want to ask the generic kind of like, oh, what inspires you? And that works way better for like when people are experiencing. So like if I'm doing a live interview, that works way better than written.
Yeah.
Nobody wants, you know, it's like really generic.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, the artist has nothing to say.
But have you had like random shit you want to throw at Saba, like over the years?
I probably think about it.
Yeah.
I just feel like everything he's saying I already know in like spades.
That's fair.
Yeah. Actual biographer, you know.
I'm excited to throw some new shit in this.
Yeah.
You know,
let's
in this
go.
One, like,
new facts.
Right. Yeah.
I have like a Saba box, I feel like, in my brain. Yeah.
Well, and of course your dad.
Oh yeah. My dad was heavy R&B stuff, but also another thing that I forget about my dad.
Okay.
My dad had late registration, and I didn't have that shit. And my dad gave us late registration, so that was a very crucial part to my upbringing. Just discovering that he had B by Common.
Mm-hmm.
So like the soulful shit I think I learned a lot about that stuff through my dad. And Joe knew a lot about it and shit like that. But I would say that those were also, I guess, just as important as discovering like a Bone Thugs or something like that. But more so down the line, like for me, the Bone Thugs was like instant gratification. Like, what? This is amazing. I want to rap right now. But the soulful, like Chicago kind of sound, as I kind of matured and got older, I'm like, this is it, you know?
Did it register that Kanye and Common are from Chicago?
No, because they weren't from where I was from.
Oh, right.
So it didn't.
Yeah.
It was like them being from
Mars.
Detroit. Detroit or something. Like, yeah, it's close to home, so I'm rapping and I'm proud.
Yeah.
But, you know, the streets that they name and in the song that is like, I don't even know those streets.
Mm-hmm.
Still some of them. you know?
But eventually were you Lupe, Twista?
I got into Twista just because if you're from Chicago you kind of have to.
It is kind of a prerequisite.
At some point you're gonna find hella Twista songs that you fuck with. And then Lupe, how did I find Lupe? I found Lupe when I got to high school. And I was friends with a bunch of seniors because Joe was a senior when I was a freshman. So one of his friends had actually, he was just like a hip hop nerd. Like, this is real hip hop. This is a true MC. This is
Joe's homie.
Yeah, this is Joe's homie. And still is. But he was a person who I was getting like CDs and shit from. So he's how I discovered Lupe Fiasco. Like, I had heard the singles and shit because they was playing Kick Push Heavy on the radio. And I'm like, I like it.
Yeah.
I like it. But it was like, you know, I didn't have internet or any way to look into the artist. Like, I didn't even know what Lupe Fiasco looked like, you know. So when I got that, he gave me a copy of Food and Liquor. And I just went home and I was like, oh, yeah, this is my favorite rapper. It was like damn near instant.
Why was it that connect right away?
It just felt tailored to me.
I mean, you knew the cross streets even, stuff like that, right?
Yeah. But I think even more so, like, I don't know. It was just like, it was new. It was new. And I think that was one thing, like, I never liked, like, my whole life, like, when everybody likes something, it's really hard for me to give it an honest, unbiased listen. I remember when Wayne was like super hot, and Wayne is like everybody's favorite rapper.
Yeah,
I didn't start liking Wayne until like 2 or 3 years ago. Like way after.
Because you eventually went back and listened.
I had heard all of this song, like Wayne, like it was inescapable.
Yeah,
it's like absolutely. And then my older cousin, who like he lived with us off and on. He was the biggest Wayne fan ever. And I think that's really what kind of messed it up for me. It kind of just ruined the experience. Like, somebody just in your ear the whole time, like, this the best shit you gonna ever hear in your life. Like, and then I'm
mad
just
about
like,
it? You're like,
yeah, and I'm just like, bro, like, no, it's not. Like, I, you know, so I had I had that. So I apologize to Wayne.
Yeah, that's fair. I think he'll be okay.
Yeah.
Well, he's Wayne, but
right.
Sorry, guys.
That'd be great.
Yeah. So, what about when you started to you started to make music first, or you started to write first?
I would say I did them both at the same time.
Okay.
I played a piano. I got a piano, and then, but that was like a real piano, so I couldn't really do anything with it. At the time, but one of my grandma's best friends having a garage sale, and she was selling an electric piano, like a Casio joint, and I really wish I still had it, because it was tight, and she just gave it to me for free when she found out I was like in music class and shit, because I was like trying to learn how to play piano. So she just gave it to me, and that's when I started like, I'm about to make beats now, like this shit about to be, you know, tight.
And how old are you at this time?
I'm probably 8.
And you knew that you were going to make beats in part because of your dad, or you just knew that on this Casio keyboard,
I could make beats.
Right.
It was like, I could make beats, so fuck it, I am going to make beats.
But how did you know that you could do that?
I don't know. I guess this is like, I've seen beats made before. Like, I guess that does go back to my dad and shit.
Right,
like,
yeah,
you know, I've seen my dad making beats. I knew my uncle made beats. So it was like, I you know, I've seen how this works.
Okay.
Right.
I just need a recorder or something. So that Christmas, my dad's dad bought me a 4-track recorder. And that's when I was like, well, I got 4 tracks. Might as well rap on it. You know, like,
they seem pretty supportive.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because your dad's a musician, so.
Yeah, my whole life, I mean, you know, there were rough patches with actually that grandfather specifically. When I stopped going to school, it became a problem. Like, you gonna just do this now? And I'm like, well.
Talking about college.
Yeah. But I don't know, but everybody has been pretty supportive as far as like my dad, my uncle. Both my uncles, I got an uncle on my dad's side and an uncle on my mom's side. And my uncle on my mom's side is probably one of my like biggest supporters, because he was in our basement, and that's where I built, when I started building our studio, that's where it was at. So he had to deal with our shit when we was like 8 and 9 years old and trying to rap and make music and shit. He had to hear all of it, you know, and wow. he had to tell, shut the fuck up, you know, like.
You're in his space.
Yeah. I'm in his shit. So he was the one.
I thought he had a little setup down there. He didn't.
What was that? I'm sorry.
I thought he had a little like music setup down there.
No. He didn't do music.
Oh, okay.
He didn't do music. All of the shit that was down there was probably just shit that I just didn't use or didn't need anymore.
And at this point, this is like a kind of a well. I mean, this is one of like the most beautiful spaces, really. The studio that you all built.
Oh my god, I know.
In the basement.
How many times have I, in my brain, I wish I had taken photos of like all of the posters and shit you have.
Oh yeah.
Or had.
Yeah. It that basement turned into that in 2011.
Okay.
It wasn't when we was first starting off. It didn't look anything like that. It was. I don't know. It was like books and like old people shit everywhere.
But a lot of it were like magazine covers on the walls, right?
Yeah. We started putting those up much later, like when Pivot started and shit like that.
So when for you did it begin to click that this was something to begin to take very seriously? When did you know that there was a future in this? Or
I don't know. I kind of have always felt like, you know, this is what I want to do. I used to draw. That used to be my other thing that I wanted to pursue professionally. But I kind of just stopped drawing when I was a kid and just started doing music. There was a time when I was in 7th grade. I'm 11 years old, and my cousin was over. Because that's who I used to rap with. I used to rap with my older cousin. And he blew the speakers to the studio. And that was a time where I got mad. I threw like this crazy temper tantrum and just put all of the equipment away. Kind of like, where the fuck are we going to get new speakers from? Like, I'm done. I'm done with music for right now.
You're 12, you're 11.
I'm 11, yeah.
Damn.
Retiring.
So, yeah.
Grand statement.
Yeah.
You're 11.
Maybe a little temper tantrum. Yeah.
So I was
tomorrow
done.
You're like, never mind.
I was done for a few months.
Oh. Okay.
And I don't remember when I really got back. It's kind of like I remember that happening, and then I don't really, I just kind of started again. And I don't know. It's like once you get a fan, it's pretty much like this is. Yeah, I'm a professional now, so probably around MySpace.
Yeah,
MySpace. I was probably like 13 when I like got into MySpace and shit like that, and started uploading music, doing beats and shit. But I don't know. It was kind of, I always took it serious. I just started taking it more serious, I say.
I kind of want to jump all the way ahead because there's so much that...
I mean, you can read one of my 30,
85 essays in interviews.
We can go all over the place time wise, and the listeners will just have to
linearity is a fiction anyway, you know.
I do like linear things though.
I don't. I think hip hop has broken us of that actually.
Chronological.
Yeah. I like just, you know, sampling and the pastiche of you know.
I think it's the way I write everything.
What good
is just
vocabulary
like
you all have.
Thank you.
Did you say pastiche?
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you. you've had quite a year.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah. Before, I guess, because I want to talk about the record.
Mm-hmm. What about the record before that record?
The record before.
What about Comfort Zone?
Well, that's what I don't know exactly where to go, but I think that this year has been, I don't know, maybe, I mean, certainly the most significant in your career.
Uh-huh.
We could go back. We could go to Comfort Zone, or we could go to Bucket List, or but I guess, I mean, from Bucket List to Care for Me, these are, you know, very different sounding records.
Even from Comfort Zone to
I mean, there's been constant progression
growth,
and evolution. But you know, Bucket List to Care for Me, obviously, there it's a different record because of the passing of Walt, and mm-hmm. and I guess. I'm very interested as a writer in the process to make that record. You know, I've heard
especially through grief and
So just in the composition of that record, how did you write it? How did you make it?
How did I do it? Let's see. I had an idea. Actually, no, I didn't. I didn't have an idea. Didn't have any ideas at all, but I knew, you know, I'm supposed to make music. I have to make music. It's the thing that I do. So I was like making little shit. I was working with Day-Day and Daoud. Daoud is my friend from Oakland, or lives in Oakland, maybe not from Oakland. And Day-Day is here with me, so we would fly out and work with him. And we were just making beats. We had went out to Oakland maybe like 3 or 4 times that year, 2017. And we weren't really making songs. We were just making hella music. And some of it was and is still really, really tight. But I never got like a... Like, I don't know. I guess I was out there like looking for it. Like... I think with Comfort Zone, it was cool because I had the idea. I'm like, I'm going to make Comfort Zone. Bucket List was more challenging because I didn't know I was going to make Bucket List until I was already working on the album. Hmm. And then I was like, oh, that's it. This is going to be Bucket List. For this one, it was like, I got nothing.
Were you feeling stuck in any way? Or did you not feel the pressure of working on an album? Or were you just kind of out in the Bay, away from Chicago? And kind of making music as a way to just be away in maybe all of the senses of that idea or that term, I guess.
Yeah, I don't really know. I'm really trying to go through like in depth my memories of the first few sessions in Oakland. I'm trying to think of just what was going through my head at the time and shit. And the shit was just fun. I don't really have
something
any.
That was needed.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that. Like, I hadn't been making hella music. So I tried to make a lot of music when I had got home from the Bucket List tour. My plan was like, all right, time to make a lot of shit. And I was just home by myself working on this music. And I don't know, for me, it's always hard to do the shit alone. Like, it's never as tight when it's just me. And one of the first songs that I did that I was like, okay, this is tight and it's different was There You Go, which actually didn't even end up being on the album.
Right.
But that was like a thing that I had started the second I got home from tour. And, I sent it out to Daoud, and he just like made the shit sound beautiful. And I'm like, oh shit, this is how we need to do the album. Like, we have a cheat code. Like, him and Dede can accomplish any sound in the world, so let's do it. And the album kind of really just came together. I know when it started, like, we would just do ideas. We would lay ideas down. I think that's the fun part. The fun part is doing ideas.
How do Dede and Daoud play into that process?
All right, let's use our imagination.
This is like a question I couldn't let's never use our, include in an interview.
Let's use our imaginations here. Okay.
Okay, cool. Are we playing Dede? Oh, yay.
You get to be Dede because you're white.
It's racist.
And I know. You don't have that much hair.
Yeah, no, true. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess you'll be me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You'll be me and I'm Daoud.
Okay.
Just because setup-wise, we would be closer together than, you know, you're not really one of us.
Damn. I'm the best one, though.
So, we're in Daoud's studio, and it's crazy. It's like gear heaven. Mm. Drum kit in there, a bunch of old vintage keyboard sounds. But the most important part is a thing called the aux cord. Mm. Okay? The aux cord goes into your computer. Because you're Dede.
Yeah.
So, Daoud is a musical genius. I think everybody involved in Care For Me, not just myself, Dede and Daoud, but everybody, all of the background singers, the engineer, I think everybody is a genius in their own right. But Daoud, he's a genius. So, he has a Nord keyboard, and he'll just play. We might listen to some other things that, like, I don't know. Anytime I'm in a session, sometimes I'll be just reminded, like, hey, I made a song in 2015 and never came out. Listen to this. And then we might just vibe. They might play some beats. They might do something. And then we'll be ready to cook. And they just are in sync with each other. So when Daoud starts the chords, Dylan is already starting the drums. And, I mean, really, that's a track right there. Like, bass line and, you know, whatever ideas will layer that to make that full.
But that's the foundation.
Yeah. We just need the foundation. That's getting the idea out. The chord progression and the drums. And I'm over there. I also have an aux cord hooked up to my computer.
Okay.
So sometimes I'm, like, also chiming in with drum ideas or maybe vocal sample ideas and shit like that.
You're like playing on your thing.
Yeah. I got a little drum pad and shit.
Cool.
But a lot of times when I'm working with them specifically, I'll just let them do whatever the fuck they want to do. 10 times out of 10, it'll come out tight. The question is just, like, from there, what am I doing?
Writing wise.
Yeah, right. So sometimes I'll just, like, let the beat happen and sit with the music and just vibe. But when we were doing Care For Me, it was different because I was like, I'm just going to write. It doesn't matter if I like this beat or not. Like, this is going to turn into a beat that I like. And I had that trust, you know, with the...
Yeah, that's something you said during the Apple talk, though, because somebody asked you about writer's block. And you were saying, like, it doesn't exist.
Yeah.
You just make yourself do it.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, it's... I don't know. To me, I didn't always think like that. And I used to definitely, like, just, I don't know, I guess be a victim of my own thinking. Like, man, I don't got it today or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, bro, just write the fucking song. Like, it's not.
And then what if it's trash? It's not, then you're like,
It's trash, it's only trash to you.
That's true.
Then you write the next song.
If it's trash, it's only trash to you. And a lot of times when I think something that I did is trash, it's only trash if they say it's trash to me. Like, because I don't think it's trash and it'll be, you know, it'll turn into life or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like a song that people love. But I was making it like I wasn't even going to finish that song. Like, that was a song that was definitely on the...
That was my favorite.
And they pushed you to finish it?
Absolutely.
That's significant then that you have that
kind of
collaborative team, that community around you.
This
is
the most I've ever felt like I had a team working on music. Like, everybody's ideas are very present on every song. So it's like I'm the one that's obviously rapping the words because I'm writing the words and shit, and I'm the rapper of the bunch. But sometimes Day-Day, and this isn't a thing that we always had the relationship to do, but just building and building and working with him for so long now, a lot of times we'll make a beat and Day-Day might go, you should do something like da 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 da, and it'll be like, I'm like, wow, this is perfect. I should do that. And then I'll like just take that and turn it into a song and shit. So it's really tight to, you know, as a producer, be able to have that type of relationship with the artist as well. Cause I think, you know, you want to be comfortable. And if you have a tight idea, you want to be able to be heard with it. A lot of times, like, to get out of Saba mode and just go into producer mode, sometimes when I'm producing for people, I'll have an idea and I might say it. And all you really want them to do is listen to it. You know, whether or not they use it doesn't really matter. I mean, you hope that they do because it's tight to you, but you want to just share it and shit like that. And I think, to, you know, every artist and their producer don't have that type of relationship. You know, sometimes it's just send me beats. And they don't even know the song
ever happened. I'm going to come with it. Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes the producer doesn't even know the song ever happened. So I think working on Care For Me, we were all in the same room for every song except Busy. Busy I did at home by myself.
And they're aware of that.
That's the first song from the album. Well, it's the first song on the album, but it's also the first song that really was like, this is what the album is going to be. Because we had made so many songs before Busy that were just good songs, but not for the album.
Yeah. Or this project.
Yeah, not for this project. Because it's not like we had an idea like, this is the sound we're going for, this is going to be the topic, or this is the type. We had nothing.
Okay.
When I made Busy, Busy happened because the song Sirens, we made the song Sirens. I just did that shit in my bedroom. And I rapped it, I recorded it, sent it to Daoud, sent it to Day-Day. And they sent me back some crazy instruments and shit.
You just sent them the vocals.
I sent them the vocal and the original beat. I had did the first version of the beat. And I sent it to them, and what they sent back, I was like, wow, it sounds like a song now. It's like, I did it, it sounded like a draft, a skeleton, an idea. They sent back a song. So I took the stems to what they did. It was like guitars, instruments, vocals, like piano. It was a bunch of shit. And I was like, I just loaded it into the sampler and I chopped it up and I ended up making the Busy beat with that. So that's how Busy and Sirens kind of turned into just one song.
I love that. It's kind of like two songs in one.
Yeah, they have nothing to do with each other.
Awesome,
they have nothing to do with each other. But by then, Sirens had, you know, it just became Busy. So we redid the Sirens beat after that. But yeah, the first version of Sirens really is just the Busy beat with trap drums. And that's how that happened. And then we just ended up re-recording everything. I don't know, but after Busy, that was like when I was like, okay, this song is special. This song is how I feel right now, and I think it does a great job of talking about so much and saying so much, even though I'm saying so little on this song. It is such a vibe and such an emotion, and I felt like that was one of the first times where musically I'm like, this is exactly like just a feel. It's a feeling. And I think that's the thing that it gets lost in the music sometimes, trying to be the best rapper alive and the most lyrical person. And it's like the music has to feel like something. And Busy, I heard that and was like, wow, the song does an amazing job of just capturing the feeling that I'm describing. And I'm like, okay, this is the album.
Did they have any say in the writing?
No, I wrote that shit alone in my bedroom.
Y'all don't talk about writing or anything?
Later on, like when we were all together, but this is before we even started sessions.
Okay.
This was just like, I was alone in my, I was so alone.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have another question, but go ahead.
The,
But then later on, you kind of like bounce ideas.
When I sent it to Daoud, because they had all heard Sirens. They know this is Sirens, and they're like, eh, this is cool. Sirens is also tight though. Let's not forget about Sirens. And then it was like weird because which song do we proceed with creating? And I chose Busy. And Sirens kind of got dropped until like the last week of recording, and we brought it back and was like, fuck it, let's redo the whole beat, let's do it. It was like some weird shit that they would have saying. Like one of the notes was like an E, and he was like, try it as a B flat or some shit like that. Some super musical shit.
But
and
not
I was
the songwriting,
like,
just
the. No, the songwriting is totally. Yeah.
Not even editing, not even like a. Hey,
I don't.
Maybe
I'm not going to lie, I don't really do edits.
Okay.
Okay.
I don't really edit shit. Yeah.
Perfect. Off top. You don't edit yourself? Like it's written and
the
it's.
The writing is. If not. I usually don't go back in and I'm like, let me change, let me dot the I's and cross the T's. The lyrically, I kind of just leave it. Sometimes it's not perfect and I think it's okay. Generally, I mean, like if some shit needs to be rewritten altogether, then that's one thing. But like, let me change this line and, you know,
have you gone and rewritten?
I don't think I rewrote anything on this album. I think all it is was like the first. Yeah.
Okay.
Out of like necessity, it just like it filling.
I'm just trying to see. You know.
But I generally.
Writers usually edit themselves, so I'm just surprised.
I generally don't.
That's dope.
I might re-record something a bunch, but I usually won't make any like lyrical edits or something. Maybe I should. I don't know, but. That shit is
you seem to be doing pretty good.
Like,
I think
whatever
you're doing,
keep doing
it. It's
boring to me. It's so boring. Like
the language of it?
Finishing like edits and shit like that's like once I'm done I want to do something new.
Sure.
Like I don't want to go back to do that. Like
well,
even,
and there's something to be said. There's something to be said. I mean, there's also
but it's a moment. That's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you felt that way in that moment. How can you be in another moment and put yourself back? You know, to edit it in the way that you...
Yeah, and a lot of times you can't.
Yeah.
I struggle sometimes with writing second verses because of that.
Like later or in the same session?
I usually don't write the first and second verse at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I just don't be having it in me. And it's like once I write a verse, I might write the verse and a hook together and try to come back to it. But I don't know. I'm trying to think specifically for Care For Me and not just in general, but... Because for Care For Me, we were doing all types of weird shit that we had never done and just leaving it. But yeah, generally coming back to the second verse, I like to do it like fairly soon. Like if you leave it for too long, you might not even remember what the song is about, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I think we benefit as listeners because that's probably part of the reason why you've been so prolific, you know, because if you're on to the next... You know, song to song, and maybe that is how you actually are revising. You know, is you're kind of taking what you learned from one song and then applying it to the next song, and then you know, and growing. And I think we've seen that growth. I mean, album to album, which you know, I think as listeners, we're in that regard. I think we're very lucky that you kind of keep it moving because that I think that's why you probably stay making so much shit.
Yeah. I think honestly, the reason is because it's like it. It and maybe it's fucked up to say, but it just doesn't matter that much to me. Like, it's like people aren't really gonna, like, there's nothing that I can say and have just everybody unanimously just get it.
Right.
People are gonna have a disconnect with it. Maybe it's my voice. Maybe it's like, I don't like his shoes or something like that, like, but just as a rapper, it's like you're not gonna have everybody,
sure,
and it's impossible. So it's like,
but this record, you have
had a lot of people,
maybe the most people. I mean, that I think that's
I
the
mean,
thing.
A lot of people, I feel like they've caught on at this point, you know.
I also think feel emotionally connected to the intimacy of this record.
I think that's what's more important with Care For Me. Like, there aren't very many. Punchlines and metaphors and all of this shit is kind of just like me blatantly saying things or telling stories as they happen. And, you know, to some people, that's not really, you know, lyrical, you know, and shit like that. And it's just like, I don't, it's cool. I don't really care that much. And I think, honestly, I'm better at writing like that anyway. Like, it's hard for me to think of, like, cool, clever punchlines and wordplay and all of that shit. It's so easy for me to just be like,
tell a story.
This is what happened on Tuesday.
Right, but, and so
super
people,
in-depth.
It doesn't like, work, but it works for you, you know?
That's my favorite. But that's, honestly, that is my favorite kind of art and my favorite kind of aesthetic is the narrative. I mean, and you, on this record, but I think records prior, are also a great storyteller.
But it's like, yeah, you're very, like, literal and, like, straightforward, but in a way, but it's not, you know?
Mm.
There's still, like, the... whatever the poetics about it,
yeah.
I mean, there's no corniness, you know. There's no.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
that.
It's just like that's why I never think of you, I guess, in that way, you know.
I think it's funny how like certain moments that are really, really small become a big deal.
Mm.
So one moment that was really, really small that had a lot to do with why Care For Me sounds how it does is actually an interaction that I had with Joseph. Joseph is my older brother, again, for people who don't know.
Or have not been paying attention up right. to this point in the interview.
Or yeah. maybe they forward it, you know.
Yeah, probably.
They just, like, cut halfway into
right,
the interview.
Right,
or they
right.
forgot.
Yeah. Right. right.
Like, damn, Joseph.
Too much new information, I can't yeah. remember.
So Joe is interesting because my relationship with him musically, like, first of all, we're brothers, but we make completely different music. And we're okay with that. It's not like we want to make the same shit. But a lot of times I'll make shit and I'll play it for him and he'll just not be fucking with it. And it's, you know, it's natural and he's honest with me about it and shit.
Does that
like
hurt
that.
Your feelings?
Not generally, because it's not like Joe is like my target demographic audience. Like Joe is a very, like Joe likes what he likes and he hates a lot of shit.
He is niche.
Yeah. Yeah. But I still play him a lot of shit because he does have a very valid opinion on most things. And, you know, he's not like one of those people who's just like, I don't like this and I don't have to have a reason. Like a lot of times he'll, you know, be super detailed with like, why he doesn't like something or why he feels a certain way about something. And I was talking to him about Comfort Zone and his favorite song from Comfort Zone was Marbles.
Hmm.
And he was like, yeah, the story that you was telling on that shit was just crazy. And like the storytelling, and he must have said something like, man, that's like my favorite shit that you do. Like, and then I was like, oh, I know, like, because it's not like many people walk up to me and they're like, marbles.
I literally
like,
don't think I've, I can't even remember how that song goes.
Yeah.
And I love that tape.
It's a story track.
Okay.
It's a story track. And that kind of, I realized, like, damn, it's very easy. Like, naturally, I feel like when I hear a song, my first instinct is like, what story am I going to tell over this?
Hmm.
And I think it, you know. With something like Care For Me, it's like I have so many stories to tell. And I think that conversation with Joe kind of inspired that, like, where I'm not going to overthink it. I'm going to just do what comes to mind the first time. Some of the beats would be made and I would just be like, oh, yeah, this is what this is going to be about. Or like I would have an idea, like I knew I wanted to make Prime King before I knew it was called Prime King or before I knew what the music even sounded like.
And then it was a matter of just searching at that point for the right fit for that idea.
Not necessarily, because I don't like the mixing and matching part, like having a verse and trying to find the right beat and shit like that. Like, to me, that's like, that's a very, for myself, I know everybody has different, you know, techniques and shit, but for me, it feels very unnatural to try to fit the music with the words. And it's like, I heard it and I started writing the story and I'm like, okay, this is it. And
well, that song is, I mean, that song is,
I mean,
so heavy.
It made people cry who don't even know.
Yeah.
Don't know John. Don't know you. Do know y'all, you know, far removed, closely, you know. So it's like,
Well, that's
it. Touched so many people.
Yeah.
Right. It touched so many people.
Yeah.
But
and that's not just my doing. A lot of that has to do with the with the music. And that's why I'm so heavy into, you know, having the team of producers that I have.
Yeah.
And trying to really capture, because there, if you listen to that song, the everything, you know, in that just production alone is also telling a story.
Mm-hmm.
And
how so?
Just listen to Prom King and don't listen to me. Just listen to the music and you might still cry.
Because
the music is moving and it is
cinematic in that
it's
way.
It's so cinematic, but it also there's so much feeling to it. So for me, it's easy because it's like all I got to do is keep up, you know, keep up with the story that is already being told. And that's how I felt like on a lot of the records that I went straight for telling the story. It's like, and a lot of the chord progressions and a lot of the drum breaks and shit like that, it's like there's so much being said without saying anything. And that's sometimes it's challenging as a rapper when it's like a beat is so fire that you don't really know what to do. Like you don't hear yourself on it. But I think what was interesting about the Care For Me process is like, one, they're all my favorite beats, but not in like a overwhelming, oh my God, where do I fit in? All of them are like, you know, they have the space for me to kind of navigate it and kind of lead it to, you know, whatever topic you want it to be about. But it I don't know, they do a good job of like keeping up musically and sonically, of keeping it interesting, because it's hard to make a 7-minute story track.
Yes,
you
true.
Know, it's not a
not
easy
a lot
thing.
Of successful
like, what do you want
predecessors?
No hook or anything. It's like I'm just about to listen to you talk for 7 minutes. Get the fuck out of here. But when the music is changing along with the story and getting intense, when the story gets intense, or even the vocal delivery gets intense and shit like that, it's just like keeping things interesting. And I think that's, you know, that's just as important as the actual writing of the song and shit.
I mean, it's just interesting that, like, you know, you have this close team of collaborators, but when you listen to Care For Me, I can feel like your loneliness, you mm-hmm. know, and like you said, it's intimate, it's like really intense, like emotionally intense, but it feels lonely, especially with that song. I guess it's probably busy, where you're like, all my friends are like, everyone's busy.
Yeah,
we don't like, y'all don't hit me up or, you know, hang out or mm-hmm. whatever.
I think one of the reasons that is the case is because it's not like that's something that I'm the only one going through. Like, you know, Day Day and Walt were just as close as I was with Walt.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing everything in his power to also move the, you know, move the needle on that feeling and invoking that, you know, just telling the story without saying anything.
Right, catering to what you're feeling.
Yeah, exactly. And so I remember I had a conversation with him about it. A lot of times, like, he would just be producing and shit and not really, like, didn't realize that it was so intense. And then one day it just hit him, like, man, this is crazy. All these songs are, like, making me feel something. Like, and musically, like, it's very rare that a story or a song is able to get that out of you. And I think, you know, with it being such a big deal, like, everybody who knows us knows how important doing this right was for us. And I don't know, it's a really crazy thing, because we did it so fast. We started in, like, officially, like, we had the beat making sessions and shit like that, but I told you, like, it didn't really start until Busy happened last year around John Wall Day, which is like the end of November, December, and the album,
it was like Thanksgiving, right?
Yeah, around then. So we had probably officially started tracking and shit in December. We went back out in January, and in February we were mixing.
Wow.
So it was like,
yeah, 3 months, or
it was a very small time of actually working on the album. But I think that's one of the reasons why it sounds as cohesive as it does, because it was like
we had a job and we did it. I mean, the feelings are all kind of like, I don't know, it's just like a moment, yeah, like 3 months. But it was cathartic.
I don't know what that means, Tara.
It was therapeutic.
Nice.
But, I mean, it's work. It's your career. How do you, like, compartmentalize, like, your feelings in order to, like, do this thing where it makes you money and, like, you make a living off of it? And you still have to feel all this.
Yeah. For me, I think it's easy, because if I just if I just made music for myself, which I try to feel like I do, I don't. It's like, you know, you want other people to like it.
Right.
You want it to make you money. You want, yeah, it to be yourself and as original and as much of a representation of you as it can, but you also want it to do well. Making Care For Me, I didn't give a fuck about any of that.
Mm.
And I think that was one
like
of the
first
things.
Time.
Yeah, yeah, it was definitely the first time. Because even as far back as like Get Comfortable, Comfort Zone, Bucket List, it's like I'm making the music that I want to make, but I want to do it in a way where the music will just like, it'll make people want to replay and replay and replay the songs. So some of the sonics are just like, for me, I mean, it's catered to me because it's, yeah, what I like, but like,
you want the shit to go.
When something is like easy to listen to, I'll just play it over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I won't even be listening to what it's like, the words is being said or anything like that, but it's just easy to play it over and over again. And I was more concerned with that, making
playback ability,
right, making the first few. But by the time Care For Me came, it was like that shit, you know, like, I don't know how many people are just playing Prom King back. I'd hope not many.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like right. You're just like going, reliving that.
But it's not the record that you do that with. I mean, which is why I think it has in part received critical praise too, mm-hmm, because it is more of something where you listen to it and you kind of need to step away from listening.
Right.
You know, you need to sit with like the emotional weight.
But yeah, Care For Me was for you. Like Bucket List project, yeah, was for other people.
No, that's facts.
And even to say that like you had the voicemails of like people, you know, what they had on their bucket list, you know, like you're speaking to the West Side saying, you know, y'all can like do what you want, like chase your dreams, mm-hmm, all that stuff. But Care For Me was for you.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it was for,
or for Pivot, you know.
Yeah, it was for myself. It was for Pivot. It was for everybody close.
Yeah,
that had experienced
that. That's
yeah,
smaller.
It
than,
was
you know,
it was small,
to.
But it was just, it was crazy because it was like some of the songs like I would send to, and I didn't send really any music from Care For Me. So when I say some of the songs, I mean one song. I sent one song to Mello, and it was Busy, and we had a pretty interesting conversation where he was like, man, like this is, and we don't talk about shit like that much, but it was cool to be able to get that via a song. And he was like, yeah, this is cool, man. I feel like I could have wrote this shit, like, cause this is exactly what the shit feels like. And I don't know, it was such a, it was such a crazy time, and I'm really proud of everybody involved when it comes to Care For Me, cause it was like, We did that shit hella fast.
I know. And, when Rory was like, oh, Saba's tape is coming in April, I'm like, but wow.
Well, how do you begin to pull yourself out of that space too? I mean, after going in for those 3 months, and because it sounds like even in the composition of it, you know, it's like a communal mourning that is, yeah, also taking place. You know, we see you now, you know, even on the road, but after being on the road.
This is happening just for the people that
do it.
No, it's
what's
not
happening.
No. The gummy worms is, yeah, what we're talking about. how do you pull yourself out of that space and begin to kind of experience joy again and just be, yeah, you know, a young man in the world and not have the weight of all of that, you know, carried with you, or maybe it does carry with, yeah, you on you know, every moment. But
I think for me, honestly, Care For Me was how I how I, you know, how I mourned that album. I don't know, making it was very easy. It's definitely the easiest album that I can say that I've made. Not to say that it wasn't like hella hard work and just being frustrated and having a deadline and doing all of that shit, but just writing the songs, I should say, all of the songs were easy because they felt therapeutic. And sometimes when shit feels like therapy, you can just go on and on and on and on and on. Like, I could have made Prom King 18 minutes. You know, I could have made Fighter way. I could have talked about way more fights than Fighter, you know.
Right.
And it's just like, I don't know. For me, the music is really what helped me. And then even more so, like, once the music came out, it was like, okay, we are done.
It felt done. Like, you felt, or like, was there a point where you felt like this is the last song? Because you, Heaven All Around Me was kind of like an afterthought, right?
Heaven All Around Me was actually the, I know I said Busy was the first song that we made for the album. Okay. Heaven All Around Me was actually the first song that we had made.
Yeah.
But it was like a, it wasn't as in depth. We started Heaven All Around Me in the beat sessions probably last year around this time. And it was like half a verse and a chorus, and we just closed the session and never opened it again. And then when we were finally doing the album, it was like, we got to finish this song because it would be perfect for the final.
Well, it fits nicely though, because you have like this, I mean, like you said, it's narrative. Mm. And it's how many songs is it? 10 songs?
10, yeah.
Yeah. So like the first, like the 8 songs, you're like, you're talking about it, but you get to Prom King and you're like really talking about it, like letting it all go. And then Heaven All Around Me is like hope, you know, like beyond what's happened.
Yeah. So I know what you're talking about now. Prom King was originally supposed to finish the album.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
then you added,
but it was before the song actually existed. So I didn't know what Prom King felt like or anything like that, but it was just like this idea, like, this is gonna be the, I'm gonna do this long ass song where I just rap the whole time and just tell the story, and that's gonna be the outro. And just, you know, placing that as the outro is like, you know, you,
it's a lot to go out on.
Yeah. You damn near just turn off your TV.
Just cry.
Turn off the TV. Turn off the computer.
Right?
Yeah.
And or just, like something that like really knocks or something.
Yeah.
Made me like fake turn up while I cry.
But Heaven All Around Me was definitely a continuation of the story, but just in a much brighter light. And
it has like an open ending, kind of. It's like,
it's a reprieve. It's a reprieve, it's like, from the darkness too,
right, you know? It's like that happened, now we're like, I mean, we have to move on, but like, you know.
And that's why opening. I'm trying to think, I wrote 2 8 bar verses to that song and then just let it ride. And this is another part where I bring up the producers. Daoud handled the outro.
I'm Saba though, so
I'm Daoud. I'm Daoud. So Daoud did the outro, and I don't know, I guess at a point I thought about like, maybe I should rap more, and like, I don't know, did I get my point across? Do people get it? I don't know. And then I heard the outro that he put on it, and I'm like, man, this shit is just, it's just beautiful. And the last moment of Heaven All Around Me is it's such a moment. And I feel like going through all of the steps, you know, and all of the other 9 songs that you had heard to get to this point, to me, that was like it's like a moment of bliss in a sense. Like, it's just, you know, it's over, it's done. And but that open ending is I don't know. I guess it was just important to have. I wanted that shit to sound beautiful.
Yeah.
I wanted that shit to sound beautiful.
It's a great way to end it.
And then, yeah. And we tried like working with some, like, we had the voices and was like, maybe they should say something. Maybe we should add words. And then we just scratched it. Like, nah, let's just leave it. And I don't know. Sometimes, like, where you don't say anything is just as important as where you do.
Just like let everything settle and sit with you.
Yeah. And I don't know. It's like sometimes it's like working on an album, it's like knowing when knowing when it's done or knowing what's right. And like Busy originally had a crazy intro. A crazy intro. And it was just too much. It was too much, so we had to dial it back. But there was like, it was like full string of orchestra and like just crazy sounding, like horns, like everything. And I'm like, it just changes. It changes the direction of the song, but also it changes that the feel of the album, like hearing that first. So he's like, let's just do it simple. Let's, you know. So it, I don't know. It's so interesting, like making music, because every choice that you make, makes such a difference in not just that song or that moment, but in the whole 40 minutes or 15 minutes or however long the project is. Like it really does make a difference. So it was cool, you know, just being able to make those decisions, because I feel like we did it right. There's nothing that I like listen to it and I'm like, we dropped the ball on, or like, man, I would change this if I could. Like everything feels how I wanted it to feel.
And I feel like that's translated. I think that's, you know, I think part of the reason why you're in the moment you're in now is because of the synthesis of those ideas, the relationship that you had in the studio, and, you know, the lament that you gave the world for the loss, and that you shared that intimacy with all of us, which is why people, I think, are gravitating towards this project in a really profound way.
It strikes a chord and with them. And
yeah.
I mean, it's honest, you know, like people appreciate honesty, even if they're fake.
Honesty is the best policy.
Thanks. So that album is done. The tour for now, you got off a major tour in support of that project. And there's so much going on now. And you are kind of in a new space.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, there's a new studio.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of new opportunities on the horizon. I'm wondering where are you looking, and what are some of those next steps for you?
To make more music, because that's, you know, that's the important part. I think sometimes there's so much other extra shit going on. It's like you really forget like why all of the extra shit is happening in the first place.
That's right.
So
my mentor told me you got to put poet before anything, because that opens all the doors. And the minute you forget what got you in the door, you're lost.
Mm. Yeah. So this is the first time. Usually when I make an album or make a project in general, it's like you got to take some time away from it and then kind of come back, you know, come out of retirement. But this time that didn't happen.
So you mean you're in like a new project right now?
I'm making music right now.
Right, okay.
Making a fuck ton. I'm making a fuck ton of
yeah,
music.
That
right
seems
now.
Like a lot. I mean, yeah.
yeah, that seems yeah, that seems yeah. like a lot. yeah.
That's exciting.
I'm making a lot of music. Honestly, like doing Care for Me so fast, it was a lot of shit two examples that I can think of. We were supposed to be finishing the album, and then we made the song Broken Girls, and it happened in like 10 minutes. Dawood like played some shit, Dylan did some drums, and I was like, okay, I got a verse for this shit.
And just to be clear, you wrote the verse, or you...
Yes, I write everything. Okay,
you're not
freestyling any shit for anybody. Okay. Right. Not even Sway. Sway, yeah.
Shit was but written. That one was fire.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. No, of course. But that's everybody brings
right, right.
written.
But that,
everybody
that
is.
I wish I could go off the top. I wish I could go off the top. I can't.
That's okay.
But yeah, we did that
played
song.
Your strengths.
And then right. we was like, holy shit, we got to use this for the album. Then the next day we did Smile. And we was like how we would start the sessions. Because the sessions are us finishing the songs. Like, some songs have one verse. Some songs need a hook. Mm-hmm. Like, life needed a hook for a really long time. So that's what the session is. Like, we're going to go in. We're going to finish life because it's been sitting here for 3 weeks with no hook on it. Let's go do the hook. And then just make a new song all together. So that's how Broken Girls and Smile happened. And we didn't know that we were going
to
use it.
You're trying to work
on
life and those things happened?
Yeah. Or just the album in general. Like, yeah. There was a lot of shit to finish, but we were still making new music. And we weren't really supposed to be.
But you're in that zone. You're in that space.
But it happened.
Yeah.
And when we were done with the album, we were still in that mode. Like, damn, some of the best songs happened when we just had 10 minutes before the session started. We need to keep this going. So it's like, it's been cool. Like, I guess touring has kind of took us out of it. But the second we were done with tour, we were like right back, like, time to make some more music again.
So that's where you're at now?
Yeah, man, I'm just trying to do cool shit, man. Who did I hear say? I went to a Vince Staples talk.
He's dope.
Before the MCA. I went there, and one of the cool things he said, and this is another example of like shit that people might just say, like, that ends up having like a huge effect. And one thing that he was talking about was just going from project to project, and I was just in my head like, wow, I couldn't agree more, Vince. You know,
like, maybe it's that writer's block thing, you know, like being like it being a practice, you know.
That always helps. Just if you're doing it, you're gonna be good at it, you know, if you're practicing. And you know, but one of the things that he was essentially saying was just like changing something from project to project and like it being a completely different project than the last project. And that's the thing that I think is very bold to do as an artist, because it's like you already have a fan base that is expecting something. But it's, I think it's important for your sanity as the artist to just like, do some new shit now.
Yeah.
So
Vince definitely did that, but you know.
Yeah.
Wow. It's not about Vince, but.
Wow. So it's cool.
But you don't like Vince, but anyway.
He's all right.
All right. Well. That's for a different podcast.
Yeah, it really is. Well, it's exciting. I know everyone's going to be excited that you are making a fuck ton of stuff. What, in terms of places people can see, is there plans for another tour, for another, like, what is coming up where people can engage with you in that way? Or we don't know.
I know I left a lot of space there.
Yeah.
And I'm talking now, so it seems like I have the answer, but I don't know. Yeah. Man.
Silence is a good note.
Do you have the answer for the collab question? No.
Oh, yeah.
I want to collab with Bone Thugs and Harmony. I want to collab with Andre 3000. But again, if you hit me up tomorrow, like, let's collab, I probably would wait another 2 albums or something.
Yeah, if he hits you up tomorrow.
If he hits you up, you'll be like, nah.
I mean, Of course, I would do the record, okay. But would I put it out?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I put it out, maybe not. I might have to like keep his stems and then like revisit it again in 2 years when I'm a better rapper. I'm like, let me, you know, now I can put my verse on this. You know who would be a raw collab? Saba featuring Frank Ocean. That would be tight.
Fuck yes.
Yeah.
Or Frank Ocean featuring Saba. That would be tight as well, but it'd be a different song.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Is it Saba or Saba? Because you just said Saba. Sab. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Saba.
Well, what do you say?
I say Saba.
It sounded like you said the same thing twice to me.
I don't know.
yo. Saba also does Saba, hypnotherapy.
Saba,
and
Saba. It's a little different.
It's different. Yeah.
Okay. It's a little different. And I will say that it's not different enough for me to correct you.
Okay.
But you say Saba.
People call me Sab.
Yeah, but not Sob, you know.
No.
Yeah,
people
call Sob. You Sob. It's so weird. Yeah, like Sob. That's weird. Like yeah. Sobbing, yeah.
Like I'm sobbing.
Yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I'm so excited for you. And I mean, we're obviously like,
I mean,
incredible.
I'm your number one fan, first of all. That I don't stand for anything.
I accept
Saba. So anyone's like, who do you stand for? I'm like, Saba. They're
or
like,
is it Saba?
Who else?
Wait, hold on.
Right.
You're like, wait a minute.
Anyway.
Fair, that's just debatable.
That is debatable, yeah.
Wait, which part is debatable?
You being my number one fan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's got a big family.
I know, but I'm just, you know. I'm just saying it. It doesn't mean it's like...
I met a kid on a bucket list tour.
I'm literally number one, but
who
I feel
came to
one.
So many shows in different
okay,
states.
Yeah, how many okay. did Tara come to
Damn,
in different
all
states?
Right, y'all.
I don't think I've seen you on the bucket list tour at all.
You feel me?
Okay, yeah. I was gonna go right, to Detroit.
Yeah,
right. Fine.
Yeah,
whatever.
was coulda
number.
Should
then it
yeah.
work? Well, come on.
It's okay.
I mean, I understand. I'm not judging you.
Okay.
I only
well okay
felt like
fine. I'll
I should
put
shout
that to
out
the side.
Hadley. That's his
oh.
name.
Oh,
I've never met a guy Hadley. Okay, I'm going to put that to the side, and I'm going to say, I stand for nothing but Saba. That's accurate.
Oh, my God.
I'm trying to think who was number one on this. I'm learning, like, all my fans' names.
That's great.
Tyler.
That's beautiful.
Tyler. Tyler's tight. Yeah, I don't know. Juliana. Yeah.
Jude.
And by I'm learning
names.
The fans' names.
Yeah,
I mean,
Christella's
like,
yeah.
she's
number one.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. They can all be number one. That's fine.
But everybody can be number one.
Well, it don't work like that.
Yeah, that's
but
not
sure.
true at all.
If you look, if you believe in communism, but Saab, is your goal to be the greatest rapper alive?
Fuck no.
That's a lot of pressure.
Fuck yeah. no. What does that even mean? It's so subjective. Like. Mm. When Wayne was saying he was the greatest rapper alive, I was not a fan.
Clearly, yeah, that was not affecting you. You were not believing the advertisement.
Right.
Jay-Z, when Jay-Z was... I did like the Black Album, but I was just like, I don't know. It seemed like he was like the god of rap, and I just wasn't that huge a fan. And I mean, as I grow older, it's like I go back and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is tight. I see what people liked it. But it's just hard for me to... I wouldn't even... Rap is so just rap. And I think, like, listening to Care For Me, it's like the greatest rapper of all time didn't make that. It's like barely even a rap album. I'm rapping, but there's so many other things in it that is good that is happening. And not to have like a, this shit don't got no genre, not to be that guy. Because it definitely is a rap album, but I don't know, just as far as like my immediate concerns are never to be the greatest rapper of all time. That shit just sounds like, one, it sounds like it's going to take a long time, and then two, it's just like there's so many, and I know I'm not supposed to say this as a rapper, but there's so many people who are technically better at rapping than me. But I don't know. I think I'm really good at what I do and making music that I like. And I guess my immediate goal is to make more people like what I like. I want to be the best convincer of all time. I want to be able to convince hella people that they like the same things that I like.
Yeah.
That could be a new thing, Coat.
It could be. It's
no,
already
what is that? Terrible convincer of all time.
Oh, like instead of
goat.
Yeah.
Greatest.
I was really
convincer.
Kidding.
Yeah. I was just confused, honestly. I didn't
I know
what was happening.
You weren't alone.
Like,
you weren't
I
alone.
Like,
yeah, I looked
pause.
Away. I looked away. It sounded like Coke, and I was like, oh, no thanks.
No,
no thanks.
Let's stick to the Sprite.
Right.
Well, top five dead or alive. To do that
top five rappers
whatever
yeah I think actually just because you
to whatever
is it because you just also said like you know it could
Care
be yeah
a rap albums so.
I mean
any genre just artists that you I think vibe with
I like Sade. I think Sade is tight, and as famous as she is, I think she's still slept on.
right?
Yeah.
I think she's hella slept on. I like Sade. I think she makes really tight music. And you know, what's tight about Sade is that it's a sound. So it's like anything that she makes that has her sound. If you liked one of them, you'll just like them.
Mm.
And that's how I want to do it. Like, we're in love with the sound and the style of music that you make, so that anything that you make is automatically good.
It. Yeah. That's a good point.
Yeah. The essence, you know?
The essence is important. Who's good at rapping? I want to throw a rapper in here.
Yeah, not Bone
Kendrick.
Does. Okay.
Kendrick Lamar is really good at rapping, and he also has good albums.
True.
All facts.
Most greatest rappers don't have the albums to back it up. They have the type of albums that have four or five good songs on it, which, no knock, but it's like, come on, you can be the greatest and you have four or five out of 15.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Kendrick is not one of those guys. He makes good music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Andre 3000 is probably one of the greatest of all time, so we can throw him on the GOAT list. What do I have so far? I got
three.
I got Kendrick, I got Andre. We can throw, I think Frank is probably just the greatest Frank of all time.
I like that though, that notion that people are can be the greatest in themselves, like in their essence, you know, to get to that space where you know that is.
There are a lot of people who try to do what all of the people that I just named. There are a lot of people who want to do what Andre 3000 does and want to do what Frank does. So he's
trying to recreate the essence
sometimes
in their own image.
Every now and again,
can't fake the funk.
No.
Every now and again, some new person might come out and be better at being that person than that person was. Let's see. I said that, so it's like I need an example.
Yeah, you need a backup.
I'm sure this happens in R&B a lot.
Yeah. But
I mean, let's do the hypothetical. Nobody, in my opinion, got the last person can be Michael Jackson. And this brings us to our next thing. Nobody got better at being Mike than Mike was.
Mm-hmm.
But so many people try.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying that
so many people have eaten off of trying to be Michael.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. Somewhere there's a, you know, Tupac clone.
True.
Then probably
has so many.
I mean, I just heard this kid on SoundCloud who sounds exactly like Frank. Like, exactly.
Link me.
Oh, yeah, I'll send it to you.
I mean,
exactly. And it sounds good, but it's like
there are Saba clones at this point,
right?
Or people who are, you know, I mean, and that's not a knock.
I haven't heard any, though.
But I think that
I have.
Really? I mean, we have, and this is not a knock. We have young people at
YCA. Right, but
YCA,
they're trying experimenting flows and you know, whatever.
You know, you learn from the masters. You learn from people who inspire you.
I'm just curious to hear what that sounds like and which Saba they're imitating.
Right. Yeah. What record?
Yeah. What year?
Yeah.
Oh, this is Saba. This is Saba circa 2012.
Well, Saba, man, I'm so glad that you're here. We're very
thanks
grateful
for having me. I'm not gonna lie, I was waiting to do this.
Well, so
we were waiting,
man.
For you too,
yeah,
so.
And also
did it.
I know, Mello.
Yeah.
We're gonna get Fresh on, of course.
Nice.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
You're welcome back anytime. Of course, you know, and you could sit in, you could do the interview with us if you want, you know, if you got folks you want to bring through.
Yeah. Questions that I want to ask people.
Please.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
That'd be fun.
We gotta wait until we get the new
bigger studio.
Yeah.
Where can people find you on the internet?
On the internet? Sabapivot.com.
Great.
It'll link you to
everything.
Yeah, whatever you use.
I mean, if you type Saba in your Twitter search engine, you
find... Yeah, just type it in Saba. It's pretty simple.
It'll come up. Yeah.
Not hard to find.
Well, yeah, man. It's going to be exciting. You know, we're only in July right now, but I already know the end of the year list is going to have Care For Me on it.
Yeah, man.
And
I'm excited to write all those blurbs.
Yeah. And just, yo, salutes and just, you know...
How cool would it be if it had a second thing on it, too? That would be tight.
You mean like another project of yours?
If like it just had, like, I don't know. Continue.
No, we don't know what. What? You're leaving us all in suspense. Like, yeah, literally.
Like another project you're dropping.
It would just be cool if it did.
If what did?
If the year end list had more than one thing that was me on it.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, we would also all would enjoy that immensely.
Yeah, is that possible? Are you
giving it?
Yeah,
give us a little like three a little songs.
Is that possible? I believe everything is possible.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah,
that's
fair.
Thank you for that truism. But I mean, is the plan that you will? Are you trying to put more music out in 2018?
We'll see how the year goes.
Okay.
You can't be committing to stuff.
I know. I thought maybe we'd get it, but right. You know what I mean?
Yes. We'll see
exactly. First heard. Yo, thank you so much, man. Yeah, thanks for being here. Appreciate you so much. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at Corner_Pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.